Welcome to The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Sunday, March the 7th, 2021. On this edition of The Politocrat, yes, Your Majesty, tonight, here in the United States, two different queens. I'll explain right after this.
How do you feel about the palace hearing you speak your truth today?
I don't know how they could expect that after all of this time, we would still just be silent if there is an active role that the firm is playing in perpetuating falsehoods about us. And if that comes with risk of losing things, I mean, there's a lot that's been lost already.
Tonight is the night in the United States of America on this Sunday, March 7th. My goodness me. This is going to be the most watched interview in decades in the United States. The most watched. And it's going to end up being the world's most watched interview in history, probably. If I may be so bold and presumptuous, dear listener. There's no question about it. You know what I'm talking about now. By now, you know. You just heard the voice of Meghan Markle, Duchess of Sussex, her official title, Meghan, Duchess of Sussex. Although, as we're hearing over the last few weeks, months, and a year, the royal duties are no longer applicable to either Meghan or Harry. Harry, the Duke of Sussex. And you just heard from Meghan Markle there. Born here in the United States, and now a part of royalty, or basically not really part of royalty anymore. Speaking with another queen, Queen Oprah. Come on, everybody knows Oprah is America's queen. If there's any royalty at all in this country, no, it's not the Kennedys. No, it's not the Kennedys. Someone said that once, that they were the closest thing. And I really wish I remember who said it and where. And if there was video or audio of that, I'd play the audio to you. Someone said that the Kennedy, and I swear to you, there'd be no reason, dear listener, that I would be here lying to you. I'm not here. I don't do those kinds of things. I honestly am telling you, I heard that. Someone actually said, oh, America's royalty is the Kennedys. And that's just a bunch of nonsense. And how dare someone even say that? God. But anyway, that's a whole another conversation for another episode of this podcast. And you didn't tune in to this to hear me talk about the Kennedys. But the other queen is Oprah Winfrey, isn't it? That is America. She is America's royalty. What an amazing human being she is, a brilliant human being she is. And just her life. Learn about Oprah's life and what she had to go through and what she's been through. Some of you may well be able to identify with Oprah's story, her life story, and what she's gone through and the kinds of things she's gone through in her life, some really difficult times. And I think all of us have gone through difficult times. I don't think there's a human being alive who hasn't. And Oprah Winfrey definitely has gone through some tough times. And now look at what she's doing. And I think there was a time not that all that long ago that Muhammad Ali was the most recognizable face on the planet. It's surely Oprah Winfrey now, isn't it? Oprah Winfrey is probably the most recognized person on the planet. I mean, there's probably three or four others. Someone might say LeBron James. Someone might say Meghan Markle even. You know, I don't know. But I think that Oprah Winfrey, Michelle Obama, Barack Obama, you know, these are among the people I think of immediately as the most recognizable persons on the planet. Oprah Winfrey is definitely one of them. She's got to be up there. She's got to be number one, I think. And of course, I have great reverence and respect for Oprah Winfrey and what she's been able to do. And the skill, the wonderful personality, the way that she interviews, I talked about that yesterday. But tonight, you can get to watch what will end up being, and I said this before, the world's most watched interview. It will be the first time that the Duchess and Duke of Sussex will be interviewed since, on-camera interview, since leaving the royal family in England. They live here in California, a few hundred miles south of here. It's not like they're my next door neighbors or anything. I don't think they'd want to live in San Francisco. I don't think that that's their city. When I say that, I want to make it clear what I mean by that. San Francisco is very small. It honestly is. San Francisco has less than a million people in it. It is 49 square miles, 7x7, literally. It's literally like 7x7. It really is, because you can walk 7 miles around each edge of it, each side of it. Honestly, I'm not kidding. And I've walked around probably half of it in a few hours of a day. It's a very small city, very small, densely populated. And that's what I mean by when I say I don't think San Francisco is their kind of city. They want a bit more expansiveness. And there's lovely areas of San Francisco. San Francisco is a beautiful place. I mean, there's a lot of beautiful scenery here. Many a picture has been taken by yours truly of this wonderful place, in which I find myself being a tourist on a daily basis. And it's beautiful. So beautiful, in fact, that I've actually put a picture of a glorious sunset that I took a few years ago now, about 5 years ago, But I took this picture whenever it was. Shouldn't give the exact year because I don't remember. But the point is, one of the most glorious sunsets. Oh, God. I even put that on a t-shirt. And it's available on sale now. It's available for your purchase right now. Go to the-politocrat.myshopify.com and you will see it on the homepage. Yeah. And believe me, it's a t-shirt that is worth the price. And you will understand. I think you'll like the t-shirt. I don't know if you'll buy the t-shirt. I hope you will. But it will be officially unveiled. I will post it on Twitter tomorrow. But if you would love to, if you're so inclined, to go to the-politocrat.myshopify.com right now, if you listen to this on Sunday, March 7th, 2021, you will be able to see this on the homepage of the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store. And you'll be able to buy it too. It's a beautiful shirt. But anyway, all that's to say that Meghan Markle and Harry, Duke of Sussex, are not interested in San Francisco. They're in Montecito, I think, in Southern California. That, you know, they're down south, as we call it here in California, because this place is so big. There's almost 41 million people living here. It's densely populated. 58 counties. And they chose a county in Southern California. I don't know how far Montecito is from Los Angeles, if it's in the greater Los Angeles area or what, but they're very happy. And you're going to get to see them. The first interview since they left the royal family, first on camera interview together on camera. And one of the world's great interviewers, probably, I think, for her skill, probably the best interviewer in the world, right, is Oprah Winfrey. I mean, there are some other people in other countries who do an excellent job. Don't get me wrong. Even someone like Andrew Neil, who his politics and mine are at the opposite ends for sure. I do like his interview style, even though I don't necessarily like his politics. I'm not a big fan of his personally at all. But one thing he does in his interviews, and he's one of the, I would call him more of a forensic interviewer. And he reacts with the same incredulity that Jeremy Paxman does. And I talked about Jeremy Paxman also. And by the way, Andrew Neil is a Scottish interviewer on the BBC, very conservative. He has been basically an institution for the BBC forever. He is the editor or owner or one of the editors in chief or whatever of the Spectator, Daily Spectator, which is a conservative magazine online that is run in England and I think in other places, run from there. But anyway, he's a staunch conservative, and he has, I think he now has, he had many a show, a couple of shows on BBC, which ran for a long time. One of them got cancelled. I think he's back on BBC again with the Andrew Neil show or whatever. But the point is, for those who may know or not know or may not care, Andrew Neil has this very forensic style. Some people may like it, some people may not. And what he does is he reacts with the same incredulity that Jeremy Paxman did and does still. And because he, I think in some ways, puts himself in the place of a viewer who is saying, wait a minute, this isn't right. This isn't all quite right, is it? Someone, that doesn't make sense. Someone's saying what they've just said. But all of that is to say that I think Oprah Winfrey is probably the best interviewer in the world because of the way she listens. I didn't go into this so much. I think I mentioned it briefly. She listens very carefully and closely. And you can tell because of the pace of the way she responds, how she responds with another question. And she's so good at that. Oprah is a really good listener. Listening is a skill. And I know I've got to keep honing my skill. I've still got to keep listening. I've still got to be better. I've got a long way to go. And I like to think that I am a very good listener. But I've still got, I think, a ways to go to be where I want to be when it comes to listening. And the key to being a good interviewer is to be a great listener. I will give you that advice right here, right now. I'll tell you that as something for nothing. I'll tell you something for nothing. That's the something. Is that if you want to be a great interviewer, you've got to be an even better listener. And once you lend that kind of skill to the person you're speaking to, the comfort level grows. Oprah Winfrey does that so well. And I don't put myself on the realm of Oprah, but one of the things that I've learned over many years, this didn't happen just with this podcast, over a number of years, is that you've got to listen to what someone's saying and how they're saying it. But you've also got to be very prepared as an interviewer too. And you don't have to have reams of paper in front of you with all these notes on it. If you know, I can interview and I do this and I do not often have pieces of paper in front of me. It's usually in my, all up in my head. And the reason why is because I want this to flow as a conversation, not as the kind of thing where you feel like you're being interviewed on a job or something. And you can tell how stilted that is if you've ever in your life been on a job interview, and we all have. And you can tell the question seems so stilted. I'm not stilted, but you know, it's a form script, it's a form book. But, you know, one of the things that makes Oprah such a great interviewer is that listening ability. And listening is such an important quality. It's a really important quality. Listening is caring. It really is. If you listen to somebody, that means you care about them. I mean, at least to the extent that you care about them enough to hear them and give them the space to speak about what is on their heart, what is on their mind, what is on their soul. Those things are really important. And you're able, if you have a patience and an empathy and a real compassion and just the ability to just listen to somebody, then if you want to get into doing interviewing, you can do it. I mean, you may not be Oprah Winfrey, but you never know. It depends on, you have to ask yourself, what is it you want to be? If you start to say, well, I want to be the next Oprah, you're not going to get very far. You've got to be the first you. And that means being unique. That means bringing your style. That means bringing your personality. I am giving a lot of advice on a podcast episode where I'm supposed to be talking about Oprah and Meghan and Harry. And I've got to tell you something. This interview tonight, CBS, United States, 8 p.m. across the United States in all the time zones, 8 p.m., all time zones. Oprah, Meghan, Harry. I can't wait. And I know those of you listening in England or in another part of the United Kingdom are looking forward to this interview as well. You'll get to watch it tomorrow, Monday, March the 8th, 2021. I would love to hear the reaction. Because what I'm going to talk about next is the way that Meghan Markle has been treated. The way that Harry's been treated too, but really the way that Meghan Markle has been treated. Because, well, you'll have to stay tuned.
So I just want to say that I called you either February or March 2018 before the wedding, asking, would you please give me an interview? And you said, I'm sorry, it's not the right time. Mm-hmm. And finally, we get to sit down and have conversation.
Well, I remember that conversation very well. I wasn't even allowed to have that conversation with you personally. Right? There had to be people from the comms sitting there.
There were other people in the room when I was having that conversation. Yeah, you turned me down nicely and said, perhaps there will be another time when there's the right time. Mm-hmm. What is right about this time?
Well, so many things that were on the other side of a lot of life experience that's happened, and also that we have the ability to make our own choices in a way that I couldn't have said yes to you then. That wasn't my choice to make. So as an adult who lived a really independent life, to then go into this construct that is different than I think what people imagine it to be, it's really liberating to be able to have the right and the privilege in some ways to be able to say yes.
And to say it for yourself. And not to have to consult with anybody at this point.
Yeah, to be able to just make a choice on your own and just be able to speak for yourself.
How does that feel? How does that feel? A woman being able to speak for herself. Now, isn't that a concept that we can all support? Well, I guess the royal family is one of those institutions, pardon me, fellow Englanders, that doesn't respect that. It's not the only institution, Lord knows, right? In a patriarchy, when are women able to speak on their terms? And without being so bitterly scrutinized? Why does a woman have to explain to you? She doesn't have to, does she? If you're a woman listening to this, do you think that you have to explain yourself to people? Do you find yourself having to do that? Do you find yourself having to do it, and then, especially if it's a man, asking you, don't you find it to be exhausting to have to try to explain to him? And not every man. I know I hate that when I start like that. Not every. Isn't that the worst thing? Well, not everybody. Not everyone is racist. I'm asking the women who are listening to me right now, do you not find it exhausting when anybody, including men, are constantly trying to get you to explain? Sometimes you just want to say something and say it without having everything you say interpreted and diced. I mean, I know I do that on this podcast when it comes to issues, but I'm talking about in your everyday encounters. And you think, goodness me, why do I have to explain to this fool? You might be calling that person worse or better than what I did. But I ask you that question after I play that clip of Meghan Markle. And you'll be hearing a lot more from her in the United States if you are there watching tonight. And if you are in the United Kingdom, you'll be hearing tomorrow or Tuesday, whichever. I think it's tomorrow. You'll get to hear, tomorrow being Monday, March the 8th. You'll get to hear and see what Meghan Markle is saying. Prince Harry as well, but Meghan Markle. Because she's really the focus here. And what she's talking about is something that bedeviled the late Princess Diana. The late Princess Diana was bedeviled by that royal family. And I know, well, she loved the press. The press did it to her too. But I know the most common response to Diana, Princess of Wales, who was killed in an awful car crash in 1997 in Paris, in a tunnel. Oh, just horrible, horrible. And, you know, the thing is this, folks, is that the average person, particularly in England, I'm not even talking the rest of the UK, particularly in England, will say, well, not everybody, I just said it again, but the average person will say, particularly if they are a royalist, somebody who is a supporter of the royal family or a monarchist, you know, someone who believes in the primacy of Your Majesty the Queen. And by the way, I've got some t-shirts available at the Politocrat Daily Podcast online store with Yes, Your Majesty on them. What a perfect way to tie into tonight's events or tomorrow night's events on CBS here in the US tonight, and I guess the BBC or ITV or whomever, Sky, wherever, in the UK tomorrow at the -politocrat.myshopify.com. But the excuse will be, well, Diana played it up with the press too. And yeah, it's true, she did. But does that justify the kind of treatment she got from the press? Does that justify the cold response from the royals? The cold response from the Queen? The Queen was very cold towards her family and towards the aftermath. I mean, I know there are going to be a lot of passionate responses to that kind of a view. And those little boys, William and Harry, they weren't even teenagers yet, I don't think, when that happened. Oh, they were teenagers. I know William was. But Harry was what, 10? William was what, 12 or 13, I think? Whenever, I don't even remember. 14, he was a young boy. I mean, both of them were. I mean, really. and that pain of losing their mother, and the coldness, and Earl Spencer, I'll never forget him, Charles Spencer or Earl Spencer, whoever it was. I think it was Earl Spencer. Charles Spencer. Her brother, who was so, he made it clear. There was no love lost there. And that royal family was so cold. And the Queen got criticized for that, by the way, in England, by some of the press, or at least some of the people around Diana. Diana was beloved. Beloved. And then she wanted to have the nerve to go and get involved with an Egyptian businessman, Dodi Fayed, a movie producer, by the way, I might add. He actually, I think, had an executive producing credit on Chariots of Fire, the movie from the early night from 1980 or so. I think he did. Yes, he did. He was an executive producer on the film Chariots of Fire. And it's just incredible. The vitriol. Oh, my goodness. She's, Dodi Fayed and Diana. I don't know. We don't want little brown people running around. Can't have that. To stain our monarchy. To put a stain on our monarchy. We don't want some brown whatever running around here. That was the attitude. And they didn't have to say those words. You could listen to it on the BBC radio call-ins. You could listen to it in the voices of some of the right-wing Fleet Street press in England. You could read the headlines in the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Standard, the Daily Express, or the Evening Standard, whatever. The Daily Express, for sure. But this is the right wing of Fleet Street. And Meghan Markle is still here with us, thankfully. But the vitriol against her now. Oh, she's taken him away. Oh, she's poisoned Harry. This is what you hear. If you go, listen, go to bbc.co.uk/sounds, sounds. Go listen to any given talk show where the royal family or where Meghan Markle is a subject, go to LBC. I'm giving these organizations free plugging. Free plug. LBC. Go listen to any topic that you find on Meghan Markle and Harry. Go listen to that and listen to the callers. Oh my goodness. If you want to see and hear racist vitriol, if you want to hear, not that you want to, but maybe you are not trusting what I'm saying, well, don't believe me. Listen with your own ears to the vitriol that comes from a lot of these callers in England particularly. And a lot of white male and white female callers. Just vitriolic. And there's some white males and white females who support Meghan Markle and Harry. But they are, in my view, the minority. My fellow country people, in general, they don't like Meghan Markle. It's a safe generalization to make. And particularly those of a certain age. That's where I'm getting at. And the bitterness. She's a home wrecker. She's going to poison and brainwash you. Some of the stuff, and it's from white women in particular. The vitriol, and quite frankly, I think some of that's I shouldn't say just anything. The vitriol you hear from some of the white female contingent of callers on these shows, it's really telling. Meghan Markle is a black woman, and she identifies as a black woman. And the vitriol is definitely racist. There's no question about it. And I'm going to also make it clear that the right-wing British press, the English press, that are right wing. Because not, okay, again, I try not to say this. There are some press, like the Daily Mirror, that is more left of center, far more to the left, so to speak. And these right wing press people, though, with the Daily Telegraph, right wing newspaper, the Barclay brothers who own the Daily Mail and the Mail on Sunday, right wing newspaper, and the Daily Express, the Sun, the Star, all these concerns, and the vitriol, the way they treat Meghan Markle, it would make you blush. You know, speaking of blushing, these gamins, which of course is a derogatory word for right wing, typically right wing white men who are Brexit loving fools, who cannot get enough of themselves when they get angry about something that is so common sense, plain and obvious and factual. And they want to, instead of saying, oh, really? I didn't know that's how it really goes. They get off on their high horse and get red in the face of anger. I saw it firsthand in front. Listen, I was in London a couple of years ago. I saw three people arguing with this brother. Black man, and the brother is sitting there giving them information and facts about Brexit and about what was going on with it, and all of them about 25, 30 years older than he, are just shouting at him, and no facts, it's just raw reactionary stuff, no facts, none. They were saying things that didn't... I was standing right there. I didn't know any of the people that I am referring and talking about. And just screaming. That's what a gammon is. No facts at all. It's just anger. It's just unbelievable. Oh, dear listener, it was just unbelievable. It really was. And that's the kind of blind rage that permeates the air and the ether on Twitter with talking about Meghan Markle. There's hatred toward her. She's not done anything wrong. Anything. She's not hurt anybody. She's not laid a glove on anybody. And you've got all of these punters out here screaming, shouting at Meghan Markle. She done to you? She's not done a thing to you. It's unreal. It's totally... But you know what? It's actually understood because you've got a viciously racist underbelly in England. Viciously. And I'm from England, born there, grew up there, raised there. And I'm telling you, this has not disappeared. It's not gone. It's not gone. And this is a touchstone of it. The United Kingdom has never, never looked at the racism within it, has never dealt with its racist history. I talk about America all the time and how we here have not dealt with that either. Let me talk about my own native country for a few moments. Never dealt with it. Never. Oh, well, you know, we abolished enslavement in the 1830s and William Wilberforce and da-da-da-da-da-da. Hold on a minute now. William Wilberforce ain't all he's cracked up to be. Study really deeply about him, okay? Really. And I know some people are lighting their hair on fire at the minute. They're igniting their hair right now because I just said that. Or maybe they don't give a damn. I don't know. This podcast is not the number one podcast on the planet, but it is listened to by people all over the world. I have the metrics to prove it. I look at the metrics every now and again, every few months, and I get emails from people from different countries. So this is not, you know, it ain't that small a podcast. It ain't a big podcast, but it ain't some tiny itty-bitty thing either. And we all have to start from somewhere. But I'm telling you, all of this is true. I want you to read some books, please. Black Britannia by Edward Scobie, S-C-O-B-I-E. And I want you to read Miranda Kaufman's book, the Professor Miranda Kaufman, Black Tudors, The Untold Story. You want to talk about royalty? And you want to talk about black people being in the United Kingdom, being in England, in specifically, and all over? And we're in royalty. We're around it. The Tudors, they were around. People do not want to talk about Queen Sophia Charlotte, who was married to, I believe, George III for something like 50 years. Queen of Hanover. Black woman. But don't tell any of my fellow Englanders that. They'll get very upset with you. I am not kidding. This is all there. I have posted on Twitter at the Popcorn R-E-E-L, my Twitter handle, photo rendering, art rendering, an artist rendering of Queen Sophia Charlotte. It's from 1700s, around 1760. 1760. She got married to George III, 1761 or 2, I think it was. And she passed away in 1818. She was Queen Hanover for, well, I don't know, what's it, 50 years, if I do my math correctly? 57 years. Queen. An English queen. Black. And what you see in the renderings of her is that she's painted to look a lot lighter and whiter than she actually was. But you notice her features, and they try to change her features. I'm looking at a photo, a rendering of her right now, and you can see the hair, even in this rendering of her where she looks porcelain white, you can see her lips and her nose and that hair. And I'm telling you, and she's got the crown on, and come on now. You see, when you don't want to look at your history and you don't want to look at the fact that you had black people in royalty and around it, and please read Black Tudors, The Untold Story by Miranda Kaufman, you can get a whole lot more information about the Tudors and the upper classes in England and all of that. She details it. And then you've got the nerve. Someone here in the US had the nerve to tell me last summer during a Zoom event where there were over 50 or 60 people listening, white man telling me, oh, black people didn't come to England until the 1950s. And I told him that, please, you have a right to your opinion, but I'm sorry, the facts are very different. And I take great issue with you. You must read Miranda Kaufman's book, The Black Tudors. Black Tudors, The Untold Story. I told him to read that book. And I also told him to read the book I just also recommended, Black Britannia. And there's page after page in both those books of black people in positions of power in England. Oh, please, way before the 50. I mean, who's telling you that? Who's telling you that Meghan Markle is the first black person within the royal family? Who's telling you that? Consider the source. Please read the books. I know most people listening to me aren't going to pick up those books. I know that. But you know what? I'm just putting the information out there. If you want to look at it, if you're inclined to look at it, you look. If you don't, you won't. If you won't, you're not going to do that. I get it. You're not going to look. But I am putting on the record that there are people, and it's not just those two authors that I've mentioned, who have written extensively about this. And they never, rarely get invited on to the forums or fora that they should be invited on, like a BBC, like a Sky. And I'm not talking about radio. I'm talking about on television, where they can be seen. And I'm sure that Professor Kaufman's been on TV. I follow her on Twitter, and she follows me on Twitter. She's really good. You've got to read that book, Black Tudors, T-U-D-O-R-S, Black Tudors, The Untold Story. You've got to read it. You've got to read Black Britannia. Edward Scobie, the late professor. I had Professor Scobie. That's how long ago. I remember it, having him in college teaching me about this. And I grew up in a place, in a household, where all of this information was around me, in books. So even as a kid, I was looking at stuff like this. I didn't understand it as a kid, but as I got older. I mean, how many people even have that as they grow up? And the education system, forget it. I'm not going to teach you about black folk in England, telling me doing all these things in power positions. I mean, what you learn about England is, oh, the 1950s, there were the Teddy Boy riots, which there were. And these white boys going around here, knocking heads, going around and beating up black folk who just mind their own business, coming in from a day of work. It was, it was vicious stuff. 1958, I believe it was, or thereabouts. Then you had the Mangrove trial in the late 60s and early 70s. The Mangrove trial. It was chronicled, by the way, recently in a film called Small Axe. Steve McQueen, you've got to see that. Anthology of movies, 5 of them, I think it is. But Mangrove, if people are old enough to remember that, and you're in England listening to this, and the police would just go about going from door to door, rooting out black people, beating them up, going to a black business and raiding it and destroying it for nothing. They just went in there. That's England. That's the England I remember. That's the England, you know? And yeah, there's been changes. But my goodness me, you've got no representation in a lot of these areas of life in England. And Meghan Markle, the black woman, who has a royal title. And that's being stripped as we speak. And I know people will say, oh, well, she brought it on herself. She's the one who left. She stole Harry. That's what these callers are telling you. Oh, she stole him. It's like that, very jealous. It's a, you know, jealousy is a really ugly thing. I've talked about this. Well, I've talked about it on Twitter, at the Popcorn REEL. Jealousy is a horrible emotion. I know it's born out of insecurity and fear. I know. But my God, when I hear people, and I hear women especially, talking about Meghan Markle, it's jealousy as well, isn't it? It's the racism and it's the jealousy. How dare she, that black woman, get a hold of my Harry. And they start to possessorize him. They start to possess. They get some of the callers get so possessive about Harry. My Harry. They behave like they've been dating him for years. Like they're his frickin' wife. My Harry. She's got her black hands on him. And gosh, she's brainwashed. That's the angle that some of these, I'm not saying all, everything, but I'm telling you, if you get them in their heart of hearts, when it's all dark, they will say to you that they are jealous and that they hate her and that it is racist and that they are racist against her. They'll never admit it in the open, but maybe behind closed doors with a couple of the drinks or not. Doesn't have to be alcohol. They will admit, because that's pure what it is pure jealousy and hatred. And I remember Sarah Ferguson, white woman, Duchess of, I don't know, Kent, York, Duchess of York, I think. I think so. And the vitriol she got. But not like this. No one's had vitriol like this. Not even Wallace Blumen Simpson, the Nazi lover. She didn't get the kind of vitriol. Now, of course, I wasn't alive back then. I'm not 100 years old. Or almost 100 or whatever, because that was in the 30s, I think, or the 20s. Anyway, or the 40s. Anyway, the point being is that she didn't get the kind of vitriol that this woman's getting from England. Do you know what? If you go on, if you go on Oprah Winfrey's Twitter page right this second, you will see a tweet there where she tweets about the show, the interview, a 2-hour interview, by the way. 2-hour show, at least. The interview could have been hours, and you know this stuff gets edited and cut. We know that. If you go on Twitter right now, at Oprah, O-P-R-A-H, you will see a tweet on there. Oprah, and it's about the show. She's promoting the interview tonight with Meghan and Harry. Do you know that she blocked the replies? Because she knows the vitriol that's out there. Oprah Winfrey has had to do that because there's so many vitriolic people on Twitter to begin with. And she knows she'll get bots. She'll get every last thing coming at her. And so she foreclosed any responses to it, to the tweet. I'm telling you, she has nearly 45 or 44 million followers. Oprah Winfrey does. When you try to silence a woman's voice, when you try to pretend that history didn't exist and pretend that the only history in your country was Henry VIII and the wives he had, or Henry the V and whatever. And I remember being taught all that in school in England. And I never heard a thing about what I did, what my people did. Not a thing. It was as if we didn't exist. You never heard anything about what we contributed. We had history class. I remember my teacher's name. I'm not going to mention it. And she would talk on and on about Mary, Queen of Scots. And she'd talk about Edward the Confessor. And she'd talk about William the Conqueror. And she'd talk about all these people. But she'd never say a word about Queen Sophia Charlotte of the 1760s. She'd never say a word that she was a black woman. She'd never say a word about the black Tudors. She'd talk about the Tudors, all right. Oh, the Tudors. But she'd never say that they were black Tudors. She would never point to it. She would never say anything about Black Britannia. And when people had the nerve to sing Rule Britannia, we shall never be slaves. That's the part of the song. It's just despicable. Despicable. I remember hearing that all the time. It's I'm telling you. And it still gets sung at these England national men's teams football matches. And it does too, I think, with the women's matches too. You can't silence the truth. And you can't silence history. And you cannot silence women. Welcome back. It's despicable. I mean, I didn't even get to, as I ranted and raved, I didn't get to the press completely treats her with scorn. I did mention that. Meghan Markle, the her being Meghan Markle. But compare it to Kate Middleton, who is the Duchess of Cambridge, and she's married to William, the first son of Princess Diana. And William's more of a traditionalist. I think he's a good person. There's been a rift between William and Harry, the two brothers. And I don't know if it was before he got involved with Meghan Markle or not, he being Harry, or not. But the point is, there's been a rift. Maybe it has been for even before that, after their mother died. I think that's probably where the rift began. I'm not a royal expert. I know Rhiannon Mills is on Sky News. Rhiannon Mills can tell you everything, and there are others, but I think of her because she is top-notch about the royals. If you're a royalist, if you're a fan of the royals, and I am personally not, I do like some of the people in the royal family. I think the Queen, Queen Elizabeth II, in these later years, I think I actually do like her. more than I did, say, for a lot of years. I actually do like her these days. I don't like the cold treatment of Meghan Markle, and I don't want to go too far into that because I have a lot more to say about that. but at another time. But there are many people I know who are royalists, monarchists. They are staunch supporters of the monarchy, and I think if you poll people in England, particularly, it probably shades to people more supporting the royals than not. I'd say probably around 60-40, which is not shades, it's kind of considerable. 60-40. There's still a strong traditionalist streak, and it's usually amongst the older populations. There's a lot of pride in that still in England, I would say. And now the rest of the United Kingdom. I don't think so, mate. Northern Ireland. Scotland. Scotland, I don't think so, mate. I could be wrong, though. I could be wrong. But I don't think so. Wales, yeah. But Scotland, no. Again, this is probably a little bit too general. But I don't know about that. I think they'll probably tell. I mean, I think they respect the Queen, but the whole royal family thing, I don't know if they might tell him where to shove it. I know Sean Connery, the late great Sir Sean Connery, would probably, even though he got knighted a few years back, he would have probably at one point in his life told them where to go. And he might have done before he got knighted, tell them where to stick it, but them being the royal family. But the point is that I think the royals are still largely loved in England, in particular, loved and beloved. And I do like the Queen. As I said, the royal family is tied to a lot of things that aren't good. And I'm not talking specifically even about Queen Elizabeth II. I'm talking about the whole institution of the royal family. Look at some of the decadent things. And I'm not saying decadent good. I'm talking about really low-down, evil, MFing stuff that's bad. The crown jewels, where do they come from? It weren't from the backyard of Buckingham Palace, mate. Try the African continent. No, I'm serious. Try the African continent. You think I'm joking, don't you? I am dead serious. I could go on and on. You don't want to hear all of that today, at least, do you? You don't want me spoiling your lovely little Sunday. And I'm not talking about S-U-N-D-A-E, as in Sunday, with a cherry on top. I'm not talking about the ice cream Sunday. I'm talking about S-U-N-D-A-Y, because it's a glorious day in San Francisco, California. I don't know where you are in the world, dear listener, but I hope that it is a good day, even if the weather doesn't reflect it, that your day is good and has been good, and that the sun is shining in your heart somewhere, because we are going through, as I say, the tough times, and they are tough. They are tough, and we just got to keep on going. We've got to find a way through, and we've got to wear these masks. We've got to. The royal family has been tied up in a lot of stuff that's not good, as I say. The family's from Germany, don't you know? Some people might say that they have ties to Nazism, and I would not disagree. If you look at Prince Philip as a kid, he had attended a Nazi rally. I kid you not. Prince Philip, the prince that's still alive? You go see pictures of this. And I think the other members too. I don't know if Queen Elizabeth II was involved at the time or not, but Prince Philip was definitely there. He wasn't prince then. There's photos of this. They're not doctored. They're not deep fakes. These are actual pictures in newspapers. Photos. They're German. They have Germanic background. But don't tell anybody that in England. Ooh, you can't tell anybody that. And Wallace Simpson, Nazi Simpson. And she wasn't Wallace Simpson American? I mean, she got treated better than this American. I said that in the last segment. And, you know, Edward, right? Or, God, there's so many of these kings and whatever. Edward had to abdicate from the throne because of Wallace Simpson. Wallace Simpson stole his heart. Yeah, Wallace Simpson, she set his world alight. And there's nothing, from a straight man's point of view here, there's nothing like that. When a woman sets your world alight, you have it all. You have it all. I'm telling you, from a straight male point of view, when a woman sets your world alight, you're on top of the world. Because she's the one that makes it all possible. And if you make her world right, and you put her on top of the world, and the two of you put each other on the top of the world, nothing can stop you. Nothing can stop the both of yous. Nothing can stop you. And I bet you that Edward, dear boy, Edward had the same feeling. Damn it. And I'm sure she did too. I shouldn't just talk from this is a straight male. Because obviously straight women know this. Come on, she had the same feeling. It was powerful. Their love broke up a royal family, broke up a throne. Broke up a throne, mate. So he had to abdicate. I'm telling you. You think I'm joking? Please study history. Please. I'm telling you. It was in the 30s. 1930s. I forget what year it was. It was in the mid-30s or so. It could have been 35, 34, 36. Edward had to abdicate from the throne. Because Wallace Simpson, an American, the love was so deep. God, he had to leave. Do you know what that was? In the 1930s, 1936, what was going on in the world in 1936 or 35? What was going on in the world? What was going on in the world, people? Divorce or not divorce, I don't care. They did. Listen, Wallace Simpson never got this kind of vitriol. I'm not saying that she didn't get vitriol. Of course she did. But come on now. And she was divorced at least once. Maybe twice. Maybe three times. I think it was twice, if I remember correctly. And she got vitriol. But she didn't get this kind of vitriol. And I didn't want anybody to get vitriol. But she's a Nazi sympathizer if she didn't get the vitriol that Meghan Markle got. And is getting still. Oh. Wallace Simpson was white. Oh, she's American and she's white. And a Nazi sympathizer? Oh, maybe twice divorced? Oh, and Edward abdicated? Oh, dear English person, my fellow country person, those of you who can't stand Meghan Markle, did Wallace Simpson take Edward away from the throne? Was it a woman? Are you blaming a woman for doing this? I bet you don't have much to say about that, do you now? And then, Meghan Markle, did she do it? I know you think that she did. Some of you think that she took Harry away. Because all you have to do is listen to the BBC radio programs. listen to the call-ins. If you listen to them in February of 2020, oh my goodness me, that Saturday in February of 2020, oh my God, the news was made, they've parted their royal duties. And do you know, I listened on that Saturday to LBC and to BBC Radio, and the calls against Meghan Markle went 90% plus against her. 90%! Oh, gosh. Meghan Markle hasn't touched a soul in any way. She's not been negative. She couldn't be nicer. And you know what? When she had a miscarriage, and when the news of that was released in a New York Times editorial that she wrote last July or August, do you know that there was very little sympathy to be had? There was no tea or sympathy to be had across the pond in my native country. Do you know that when they discussed the Sky Papers on Sky News, the segment where they talk about the news in the Sky Papers, we review the news of the day as it comes in the English newspapers. Do you know that it was a very flippant response to the news that Meghan Markle disclosed that she had miscarried? Do you know that they almost didn't even talk about it? That is the vitriol that you've got coming from the press and the racism and misogynoir. And they barely mentioned the miscarriage. If that had been Kate Middleton, it would have been a 5-day story. You would have had people crying and being oh so sympathetic. The call-in programs would have gone on about it for 2 days. Because the racism still lurks deep in the English heart. All the favorable stories about Kate Middleton and Meghan Markle doing the exact same things that the favorable stories applauded Kate Middleton for. But Meghan Markle, when she did those very same things, that very same racist, right-wing English press said that she was a monster, said that she was horrible. She violated rules and protocol, put kids in danger, put family in danger. You know, she just won a judgment recently, Prince Harry and she, against one of these rag newspapers, one of these right-wing newspapers, for the BS that they printed about her. And just like with Diana, this same right-wing press in England on Fleet Street, they're not stopping. They have contempt. And they have contempt for women, particularly of any racial group, but particularly black women. The way they treat Diane Abbott. And again, you'll find the same, Diane Abbott, by the way, for those of you who do not know, is the left of left in the Labour Party. And a black woman who has been a member of parliament in England for many a year now. Used to run with Bernie Grant, the late great Bernie Grant, and always stood up for the people, always has stood up for people, always believes in the working class. And has fought for them for a long time. And fought for black people for a long time. For all people for a long time. In particular, black people and the working class. That's Diane Abbott. She still has her seat in Hackney. Hackney in London. In northeast London. She's where Idris Elba's from, by the way. He's a Hackney lad. Hackney boy. He's a Hackney lad there. Idris Elba. And I know you love Idris Elba. And that's the constituency that Diane Abbott serves. Black woman, member of parliament, MP. And the vitriol she gets on social media. She was the most attacked member of parliament in all of England and Scotland, all of England, all of the United Kingdom. It was Diane Abbott. Diane Abbott. All the death threats and the racist tweets and the misogynistic tweets and the misogynoirist tweets. Diane Abbott, the number one most attacked politician on Twitter in the UK. And this is what, and the press vilifies her, the right-wing racists in the English press on Fleet Street, the right-wing press there. They attack her all the time, and they do the same to Meghan Markle. Meghan Markle, for doing the same things that Kate Middleton did. They're all over Meghan Markle. You would have thought she'd committed a crime. You would have thought she would have murdered somebody or something. She didn't murk anybody. She didn't murk anybody. She's not a mercenary. My goodness, these people in England, in the press, in the right-wing press, it's just abominable what they do. And they lie, and they lie, and they lie. And it's disgusting. It's disgusting. And they've had to make so many payouts over the years. And they lie about all kinds of people. They lied about the 96 people. They lied. The Sun. You know, the Sun is not even on sale in Liverpool. In Liverpool, England, in the Northwest. I love Liverpool as a city. It's beautiful city. It's terrific. By the way, though, it's also an enslavement port. If you study your history, you will find Liverpool was one of the biggest ports for enslavement of the transatlantic slave trade. Liverpool! I'm telling you. You see, people don't want to look at this history. Although, if you go to the International Slavery Museum in Liverpool, the next time you are able to fly, once you've had your vaccination and you had your mask, your three masks, your triple masks, your two of your three, and you feel comfortable traveling again and this stuff is all open to us again, please go to the International Slavery Museum in Liverpool. Please, it's off the Albert Dock. It's off the dock there on the Mersey. You've got to go there and see this history that most of England and the UK pretends doesn't exist. The transatlantic enslavement trade. And the ports. And all these places the Beatles spoke about, like Penny Lane. Major places for enslavement trading. And trading of black people. Enslaved black people. In auctions. On Penny Lane. And all these places. Come on. The Beatles talk. Anyway, you've got to go to the International Slavery Museum in Liverpool. It's free of charge, by the way. And it's also one of the best museums in the world dealing with this. Really. And I know there's the National History Museum here in the United States in Washington, D.C., the Smithsonian National, which is also a great place, I am told. It would take you basically a day and a half to get through that. But you've got to go to the International Slavery Museum. It's astonishing. Every time I go back home and I travel up to Liverpool, I go there. That's whenever I go to Liverpool, that's one of the first places I go to. And I go again and again and again, again and again and again. I'm telling you, you've got to go there. But the Sun is not the Sun, not the actual Sun, but the Sun newspaper, that right-wing trash bucket, is not sold in Liverpool because they lied about 96 dead people. And they said, ooh, the Sun, oh, these people, they, excuse my language, urinated on police during the Hillsborough disaster in 1989, April of 1989. I believe it was April 13th of 1989. When Liverpool Football Club, boy, are they going through hard times right now, and a team called Nottingham Forest, which a lot of you in England are very familiar with if you are a football person, played an FA Cup semi-final game, or at least about a minute and a half of it, before it had to be postponed. Because some police commander, David Druckenfield, he was convicted last year of being criminally negligent or civilly liable for negligent homicide, criminally negligent manslaughter. And some others in their infinite wisdom decided to pack an already packed stadium side with a bob, which is trapped with a fence, so you couldn't get onto the field, trapped them so that you got hundreds more people crushing people And it was an all-standing place, so there was really nowhere to go. And 96 people were crushed to death. And the Sun newspaper lied and said that these 96 people were vandals and they stole things from police and they urinated on police. Oh, God. And how do you think the 96 family members, the 96 families of those dead people felt? And they had to fight for years to get the names of those 96 people cleared. Finally, in a year or two ago, or three ago, finally, justice for the 96 who attended that match, all Liverpool fans. And they all were killed because police did this. Let more people into the stadium. Pat. And the Sun newspaper lied. And I'm telling you, these right-wing press people do so much damage to people's lives. And they're doing it to Meghan Markle. And they're doing it to Harry. And Harry and Meghan decided, because especially what happened to Princess Diana and this press, they said, we're out. We're done. You don't appreciate us here, which is why they left England in the first place. And they moved here to California, to sunnier climes, nicer weather. And invariably, with some exceptions, especially when it comes to poor Lady Gaga's dog walker, nicer people. And people who will leave them the hell alone. And that's why they left. Because you couldn't. Some of you in England, you couldn't leave well enough alone, could you now? You couldn't leave Malone in peace. So they had to get rid of their royal duties. We don't want this anymore. And the royal family doesn't like Meghan. They never liked Meghan Markle. They never liked her. Why do you think she's given the interview? It's not for money. It's for to speak her mind now. They wouldn't let her talk. They couldn't stand her. They couldn't stand her. All the pictures they released at the holidays. Where's Meghan Markle? Oh, but when she had Archie. When she gave birth to Archie in 2019. Oh, the Queen was there. Oh, the Queen was there. But not for Meghan Markle, she wasn't. They turned her blind. They were so cold to her. It's like the Mick Jagger song. That song, I couldn't remember the exact name. I think it was one of his solo numbers. When he was solo for a little while, he was never as good. He's never as good solo than when he's with the Stones. It's like all of them, right? When Keith Richards does his thing on his own, he's good. He's good. But he's not as good as when he's with Mick and Charlie and Ronnie. Come on. You know that. If you're a Stones fan, come on now. Mick Jagger on his own, he ain't as good. Come on. He's not as good. You know that. And Mick, but this one song, when Mick Jagger did his solo, and he may still do some solo stuff every now and again. I don't think he does, though. But he did this song years ago, and it goes, and I'm not going to sing it like him. I don't think he want me to do that. The part of the song goes, I'm so hot for you, I'm so hot for you, and you're so cold. And he's talking about a woman, and you know, some of his songs, good grief, you want to talk about Misogyny Central. I mean, some of the songs he used to sing. I mean, go look at Brown Sugar. What do you think he was talking about? Who do you think he was talking about? They actually had to alter that song, by the way. When he sang that on TV and things like that, it's like when they did this with Ed Sullivan, the Doors and that, and Elvis Presley, and he had to, you know, not swivel his hips because that was a big deal in the 50s. Ooh, if he swings his hips, ooh, that's trouble. And the Doors, and they had to come on, baby, light my fire. We couldn't get much higher. They had to change the lyric, the Doors. Oh, drug use and sex, and ooh, we can't do that. Oh, my God. High, ooh, we can't do that. That's drugs, ooh. I mean, honestly, this is how conservative this place it was and still is in some ways. But yeah, Mick Jagger did this song, and he's talking about a particular woman that he's involved with, and he's hot for her. And the song goes, I'm so, the part of the chorus, I think, I'm so hot for you, I am so hot for you and you're so cold. He's saying that she's essentially, pardon me, a cold fish. And that's what he's saying in that song. I wish I remember the title. I'm sure with the lyric you can find that for what I just said, you can find out what the title is and you can listen to it for yourself. But this is how cold, when I used all of that as to say, I used Mick Jagger to say, look, this is how cold the royal family was and is to Meghan Markle right now. And they basically excommunicated Harry. Harry's had to go through all this counseling. And I dare say Meghan's probably going through it with him. All the stuff that happened to that little boy when he was a boy. He lost his mother. And pardon me for the horrible film analogy. A boy's best friend is his mother. And I mean, at 8 years old, 10 years old, he's walking behind a coffin and he's got the eyes of the world on him. You don't think that he would want to protect, and I know this is sounding paternalistic, but you don't think he'd want to protect the woman that he's married to? And he would want to make sure that that stuff never happens to her. Never. He ever, ever wants that to happen to a woman he loves again. He loved his mother. You think he wants to see that happen to his wife? Come on. That's what a true man does. He cares. And it's not about masculinity. I'm going to flex my muscle. I'm talking about someone who has responsibility to care. He cares. And he's trying to protect his family. Excuse my French. His family. She's trying to protect her family. Why do you think they moved? I know that the interview tonight that you will be watching and that you'll be watching in the UK tomorrow night is so much more interesting than what I've been gabbling on about here. But I hope you enjoy the interview. I really do. It's going to be way more interesting and it's going to be fascinating to hear from Meghan Markle. And read some of the English press today and you check it out for yourself. This right-wing press, the way it treats black footballers, I'm telling you, they're a racist bunch, these blooming right-wing press on Fleet Street in London. They are racist to the core. It's white men controlling all of that. The Barclay brothers are disgusting. Rupert Murdoch, who used to have a big stake in English press, he's disgusting. And they push the buttons of the white Englander. And the white Englander who has his or her own racist biases to begin with, they just sound the trumpet and repeat all that they see. And the white people who don't do that, they're at least moving in the right direction. But there's plenty of the old guard, plenty of that guard in England, I'm telling you now. They are all up for this and they love it. I'm sure they'll have a lot to say after tomorrow night. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.